Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. Today I'm joined by Brandy Sanders, who is an award-winning CMO and CRO, and I'm super pumped to dig into some of her experience over the past 10 years of building incredible ABM programs at a variety of incredible organizations. So Brandy, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, super excited to be here and thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm really excited because as we were talking before we pressed record, like I think of so many marketing programs that we generally get analysis paralysis. Like we just think and contemplate. And man, you expand that past marketing, and it's marketing and sales and CS and finance and operations and the executive team. Like ABM is so ripe for analysis paralysis and spending months, if not years, talking strategy and not doing anything. So I'm excited to talk through with you today. Specifically, like how do you break through that analysis paralysis and actually develop an organization that has a bias towards action? Yes. So with that, that's the context for today. Brandy, I'd love for you to just kind of give us a high level overview of some past experiences where you had organizations that started to spin their tires and like had this analysis paralysis and how then you functionally started to break through that process.
Oh, that's such a spinning the tires is such a good analogy because you end up seeing the burnout mid-quarter, especially if you were under, you look backwards, say like 24 to 36 months, that growth at all cost mania that was kind of shaking a lot of B2B and SaaS and tech in general. I think infected the idea of ABM. And I'll preface our entire conversation by saying that most folks in marketing and even in sales, depending upon their level of kind of experience, seniority, and the peaks and the valleys they've gone through, when they think of ABM, they're automatically thinking of something like it's a target account list. Or like this is just a regular like go-to-market motion, and it means that we get a target account list from sales, and then marketing kind of just runs the show like flying solo across all kinds of like rando channels. And then at the end of the quarter, we look back and say, hey, how did that target account list look? And I think it's so much more than that. There are levers within the marketing organization, and I say this as dual CMO, CRO, that are so imperative that if you gloss over them, you will be the one falling on your sword as a marketer in the end of that quarter, year, whatever. And that is, you will need executive sponsorship. I have never seen in my entire, and I don't want to date myself, but I know what the Care Bear stare is. I have never seen in my entire career a successful ABM, true ABM motion in an organization that did not start at the top down. Meaning that there is C-suite level executive sponsorship. You've got your VP of sales in lockstep with your VP of marketing or demand gen. Your directors are in lockstep. RevOps is inextricably like tied to marketing ops. You've got really deep collaboration that has to start at the top and kind of cascade. So I think full throttle before we even go into like bias to action, just defining that ABM is it's so much more than that target list. It's sales alignment, it's executive sponsorship, it's documented in very clear expectations, KPIs and OKRs. And I think just throwing that right in front of the bus that we're gonna be charging on is super important because otherwise people are like, yeah, it's a targeted account list and you get it once a year and then you just go blasty blast on emails and maybe do some LinkedIn and then totally, you're like gonna nail the enterprise segment. Nope. That's not it. And at the end of that, and the end of that quarter, someone will get fired or put on a PIP because marketing, air quotes, didn't do the job. And it's so much bigger than just that one body in the bus. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we often are talking with all of our clients on the number one data back reason on why ABM fails. It's a lack of sales and marketing alignment.
Absolutely.
And it always comes down to definitions. And yes. I love the example of marketing talks about leads and sales talks about leads, but marketing means leads as in context or contact generated, and sales means leads as opportunities generated. It's like we're using the same words, but we mean different things. And as a result, we're saying, we're speaking a different language. Yes. So I love that call out.
Codification is so critical. I think people like walk past it because it's the boring part, right? It's not like, hey, here's our five sexiest enterprise logos, or like, hey, we're going to go SMB to mid-market evolution. Here's our like 10 lookalikes from the most successful closed one accounts that we've had. Like that's an easy way to do it. But defining that, codifying the language, I would literally call it like, you know, measure three times, cut once. So that you both agree on the reality that you're pursuing is just cannot be, I think, stated with enough gravity, because it is the difference between something that kind of half-asses its way towards a finish line. And then we go, oh, ABM doesn't work. Well, it's not really the ABM didn't work. It's the org didn't work. And that, again, I think really starts at the top. And those leaders for both sales, marketing, and of course, product, customer marketing, like everyone's job is revenue at the end of the day. And that's the purpose of investing with, you know, fiscal investments into ABM. And so it's kind of like really very crisp codification and definition can't be stated heavily enough.
I love it. Mm-hmm. So let's say we have that. So like we're all aligned, which that's defeated in itself, for being honest, but let's say for purposes, that we have that. We've got clear definitions. We're all aligned. Mm-hmm. Now we're in the process of building on our target account list based on this alignment. Mm-hmm. In my experience, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, this is often where a lot of people do get that analysis paralysis. Yes. And I've actually seen it in our sales process. We'll have people that just say for 4 months, oh, we want to get started, but we just want to know before we sign the agreement who we're going to get started, or like where we're going to focus from a target account perspective.
Yes.
It's like part of our process is helping figure that out, but okay. And then they end up just never moving forward. So I'm just curious, like, how do you help organizations and how have you helped organizations break through that analysis paralysis?
Yeah.
Just like, who do we go after? Where do we start?
So it's so funny. I'm going to go all the way back to Blackline, which is a few years ago in my career, where I was working with marketing operations and demand gen and then campaigns, SEO, web, you name it, the full nine yards. Rolled up into the team that I was working with that leadership team on. And I think when we started to think about ABM, and this is when demand base and other sort of like some intent signals, early stage sixth sense were coming out, people would go and assume that the tools and the platform would somehow make magic happen, right? Yep. So they would just go, you drop six figs, your CFO is like, hooray, we have an investment in this MarTech stack. You'd go and you'd throw it at the spaghetti at the wall, so to speak, and like, oh, this, you know, the platform solves it, not people. And I am of the complete opposite camp, which is you don't need six figure investments. And there's a time and a place where we can definitely talk about orgs that do need it, given maturity and operational size. But you don't always need that. What you need is focus.
Yeah.
Focus for a CEO who might be, say, reactive or distractive, or a VP of sales who's more, say, strategic than tactical, or a director of RevOps who is more report-oriented than it is workflow automation, triggers, and categorization or segmentation-oriented, can be a real challenge. So it's like avoiding shiny object syndrome and saying these are the deadlines, i.e., it's not rocket science, it's just, what's the word I'm looking for? Decisiveness. And so marketing, so like I said, it's not just one body doing it all. But what I will say for most of my time in marketing, I've been the person kind of reaching across the aisle and saying, hey, if then that, it's a Boolean, build it scientifically. If and Q2, you want to do ABM so that you are not spraying and praying and doing wasted spend and maybe attracting high churn ICP. We want to focus on what our closed one for the last eight rolling quarters is telling us so that we hit these pipeline goals, not 1x, not 2x, 3x, 4x, like really knowing with confidence when we go into that next two progressive in front of us predictive quarters, we will have, based off the current conversions, macroeconomic factors, churn, you know, seat, price size, all that jazz, we will be able to hit the base minimum of those numbers and maybe do a stretch goal. If you want to do that, then you need to follow this guideline. And I, at Blackline, as an example, was working with like series decisions and demand base. And there are literally frameworks. You can Google these and I'm more than happy to, you know, share them as an asset.
Yeah.
Basically say like your maturity stages, like say 0 through 6, most of the orgs, which is why I'm laughing at your earlier assumption of like, yeah, we have codification. I'm like, okay, 8 times out of 10, they don't. But I would say that maturity aspect is where you're like, you've got a 6-week window. We'll call that ramp up. And in that 6-week window, the focus, meaning you will take time from your day to day, so sandbag it in the previous quarter so that you will have time ready for this initiative, is the sit downs with sales, the sit downs with customer success, the sit down with product and engineering, where we say, here are the 5 expectations for, say, this week, next week, the following week, et cetera, with the ultimate goal of being, we've identified, you know, those specific, I'll say top 25 accounts, enterprise, top 50 mid-market, top 100 SMB, whatever that number may be that you as a marketing leader or even a mid-level have agreed with mid-level or your VP sales or CRO. And then you set that in motion and you really have to, as the marketer, reach across the aisle and kind of run whip. I call it run whip because you have to come behind them and this is the whole org and kind of clap and keep the chickens and the sheep and the cattle moving because they will get distracted. They will get reactive and they'll also be afraid because if you commit in sales, you're committed. Meaning if you say, hey, as an AE, a VP of sales or a CRO, my goal is XYZ accounts and I want to get 25% penetration in this segmentation list by X. Now you have given a number. And once that number's on the board, you can't back off from it. And I think in a lot of ways, that's the chasm. So for marketing, it's like we've got the target, it's digital channels, it's very easy to get ROI, it's easy to understand kind of the impact, not just on vanity, inquiry, MQL stuff, but like SQL, understanding that stage progression. But also for sales, it's more difficult because it's like, well, I got them, but nothing happened. And then they go into that mystical realm of floating, which sales, you know, is terrified of, and most good VPs of sales and CROs want to avoid the junk drawer. So once you commit to those things, they are something you communicate back to, say, your CEO, your VC, your board, and then at that point, you're committed. So when you say you're doing ABM, and this is where the analysis paralysis comes in, because it's safer to sit still than to attract. It's like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. Like the visual acuity is based on movement, right? So if you start moving on it and you can't, air quotes, show results in the magical growth at all costs, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, P.S. it takes much longer and we'll save that for a later point in the podcast, then people get afraid. And I think the other thing is it's very kind of revealing when people are like, I don't know who I'm targeting. And that's scary for sales to have to say, because they have just been, say, aggressively just going out and closing any deal they can get their hands on, which in the long run might not align with the board, the CEO, or, you know, the leadership, executive leadership team is looking for. So all of that analysis paralysis really comes from a place of fear and often hesitancy to reveal all of the comp structure, the targeting, the lack of targeting, or the huge gaps that, you know, as a director, a manager, even a VP, that have been on that team with exits, churn, somebody jerry-rigged this CRM back in 1997, no one's touched it since. There's a lot of work that goes into that. And once you start doing it, you can't stop. So I think that's when you run into that analysis paralysis. Is once you begin taking that step forward, it becomes very difficult to backpedal without it looking like a really big failure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're just specifically when it comes to sales compensation, I think it is one of the often underlying challenges with anything that's an ABM program. Because the compensation structure is intended to incentivize the current programming, but ABM is a shift in the program.
It is.
And sometimes the way in which our sellers are incentivized doesn't align with what the ABM program actually needs.
100%. 100%.
I'm curious, because there's a lot of things that we talked through of just like, there was anything that I heard of psychological safety is something that is necessary in order to build this, because there has to be an admittance of like, I don't know what I'm doing right now, as far as it relates to how we go after people. Mm-hmm. I'm going after people that I think are the right fits, but it's more like a gut feeling. I like met this person at a conference 2 years ago. I've been chasing him ever since. Like, mm-hmm. I'm curious, how do you then create Blackbird, like the psychological safety to then have cards on the table to have an actual dialogue around how to overcome an analysis paralysis?
I think this is one of the harder things because it's human, right? This is human, meaning do you have, and I have some great examples of when this didn't work, but I'm bound by NDAs and I won't share, but what I will say, where's my like bound by NDA t-shirt? But what I will say is in low trust environments, ABM almost never works. In low trust, meaning micromanagement, reactive, sometimes I would even call semi-narcissistic leadership that is not servant leadership or collaborative leadership. It's on Mount Olympus, it's conceptual, and then it just kind of lobs the concept down to mid-level and says, go get it, tiger, but doesn't give like guidance or come down from Mount Olympus to really build the tactical, like, what does that even look like? Like, maybe you have a team that's never done that before. You're setting them up for failure. They know it. You know it. Their bodies go in front of the bus. There's, you know, obviously things that happen when those bodies go in front of that bus that are not good for that team. And so that's operating from a place of fear and control. The places I have seen ABM thrive and overcome that is when you have sales leaders, and there's more than a couple who I've worked with who are absolutely phenomenal, and leadership teams who are like, you know, they're bearing their chest open. It's like, boom, like I'm Clark Kent. I'm not Superman. How do I get from point zero to point five this quarter, point five to point 10 next quarter, like build the staircase to heaven so that we can understand that we are doing something that is rooted in efficacy versus reactivity. And so for me, I think it's a very distinctly different thing that sometimes is out of your control as a marketer. And even as a CMO and a CRO, there are days when it's still out of control, where if you have kind of a place that functions on fear or historically has been very challenged with change management, is hesitant, like talks a big game on growth, but then won't actually do what's necessary to grow. Like if you imagine, I love metaphors, right? So you wake up and you're like, hey, I want to win an Ironman contest and like a triathlon. And then you talk about it all the time, but you never go to the gym. You never pick up a weight. You don't balance your diet. You're not doing cardio. You're literally just talking out of the side of your neck. And then at the end of that quarter, you go, how come we haven't won the Ironman contest? And you're just sitting there as a leader or a marketer going, well, step one would have been put your tennis shoes on and take a walk with me so that we could talk about the training. And that is the reality, I think, that often gets glossed over with people talking about ABM is like, well, it's marketing's fault if it doesn't work and this, that, and the other thing. But it's so much more about creating a high trust environment, which is marketing. Again, you tend to be the person reaching over the aisle going like, hey, I want to help you close deals. My job is revenue. Your job is revenue. I'm tied to the ARR goal. Usually there's a variable involved compensation for marketing now, unless you're some lucky soul out there who just gets to coast by on raw leads and MQLs. Congratulations. You're still in the Mad Men era. Good for you. Never leave that job because it's rough out here. for the people who are in the trenches of actual 2024 go-to-market, it is much more empirical, statistical, rigorous. There are macroeconomic factors. Like, it's rough as hell. And so you have to be willing to say, we are going to feel pain together. And at the end of that pain, the payoff, and this is where codification and hyper-documentation pay off, because you give them a visualization of the next 30, 60, 90, 120, here is the goal. And then you have those little, just like in Super Mario Brothers or a game, you have the little kind of milestones that you can check off together collaboratively so that you're building trust with that sales leader or that customer success leader or that product engineering, whatever it might be, leader who is definitely involved with the things that you're doing for like go to market. So I think that to our earlier points, that analysis paralysis comes from a place of fear. It is extremely prevalent in low trust environments that have a history of like high turnover, churn, problematic leadership. Like you see this time and again, those orgs never succeed. I've seen acquisitions, I've seen fire sale exits, I've seen closures. and I've lived through all of them personally. But the places that have succeeded, that have actually done true ABM, not just a target account list, but executive sponsorship, sales alignment, et cetera, those usually are when you can look and see a healthy basic marriage between sales and marketing. Mom and dad aren't divorced and arguing. They might have healthy tension, as all marketing and sales orgs should, hunter-gatherer versus long-term farmer. But I definitely think you have to build that trust. And sometimes you can do it. And other times it's completely out of your control to make that happen at the org you're at.
Yeah. I've heard the analogy. You want to at least be able to imagine that your CMO and your CRO can go out for a beer after work and actually enjoy the company.
You would hope that they would.
And if they can't, then you're not in the right environment.
Yeah. There has to be trust there. There has to be. And even if not, the distinct, like, let's sing kumbaya, hold hands and like go to margarita time. The idea that like you feel the pain together as two professionals who are here and equitably invested in the success of an organization. And listen, change is pain. Change Yep. is growth. Growth is part of a business, especially in startups. So if you can't handle pain and change, this is probably not that space for you. But if you can do it collaboratively and share that pain and or the change management and create high trust with your sales leaders and executives, the success level on that just quantifies itself.
Yeah. Last two quick questions for you. I'm just curious because admittedly, and I want to say this from a point of failure, and I mean this sincerely. Yeah. I've worked in a couple of organizations in which when I stepped in, there was high trust and I was able to thrive and flourish. Yes. I've also stepped into a couple of organizations in which there was low trust. And like, I was not able to thrive and flourish. And I ended up transitioning out of those organizations and like this weird, like I quit, got fired. It was just like, everybody knew this wasn't working. So I left mm-hmm. and happened to me a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I don't personally know. And I mean this sincerely. I don't know how to build the higher degree of trust
Yep.
within an executive leadership team, unless the executive leadership team already has a bias towards like high trust. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like any thoughts or advice of like, how do you help to build that trust? So where you can, and like, if the answer Yeah. is it's culture from the beginning and like, we can't fix it, that's okay.
Yeah.
And people listening in may need to just go look for another job. It's also okay if that's the answer. That was my answer.
Yes.
I left those jobs and I found a new job, but like, I just don't know what the answer is outside of that. And I hope that there's another answer, but I'd love your thoughts on that.
I have also, and I was going to say LinkedIn is a testament to this in many ways, as I'm sure my resume is. I have, through the valleys and the peaks, come into organizations that were high trust and eroded to low trust with executive turnover or changes or layoffs or macroeconomic factors. I've come into organizations that were low trust that didn't necessarily get to high trust, but you could get them to at least trust you to get through, say, that first couple of sprints. And as long as you were empirically showing improvement, they would go in that general direction. But I don't think I've ever come into an organization and seen it go from absolute low level micromanagement, viewing marketing as like a deck making machine that just like doesn't have a strategic place at the table and is kind of just service center mentality. Now there's a place and a time for that collaboration because revenue is everyone's job and we're there to help support that, but it's strategy. Marketing Yeah. is not just a dump drawer for edit this thing, post to social, do this thing over here, do this other thing over here. And I think when you look at the most recent onslaught of successful companies, they are heavily invested in appropriate headcount, resourcing, and budgeting for marketing. And so the truth is like, can you go from ultra low trust to high trust? I've personally never seen it, you know, but I've also, you know, never seen a couple of other things that are highly improbable. So maybe it's possible. But I would say to your point, I think the reality for many marketers, especially in a challenging market like this one, sometimes you just have to stay. You have to kind of grind through it, make as many quick wins as you can get those numbers on the board. And at least if you do walk away, know I did as much as I could with the limitations that were given to me. And I do have wins that I can show for the marketing realm, but it might not necessarily reflect the, you know, an amazing IPO or a wonderful acquisition or merger story. I think that's a pretty hard truth that not a lot of folks want to hear, because it's like, do you ever get the, it's like the TikTok thing, like, I can change her, I can change him. And you go and you're like, yeah, let me, oh, that person's super damaged. I know I can get in there and EMDR therapy that thing out. But the truth is sometimes those leaders do not change. And that revolving door that maybe you walked into is there for a reason. And I think that there's certainly incredible lessons to be learned, even on what it is that you do not want and what kind of orgs you want to work with, that come through those really tough times, whether it's layoffs, poor management, maybe a toxic culture. I don't think I've ever met anyone working in startup world who hasn't at one point or another had those sort of like, wow moments where you're like, I can't believe this is reality. But I would faithfully say that if you are persistent in what it is that you're pursuing and you admit that there has to be an across the aisle effort for ABM or segmentation or like really intelligent marketing plays that align with sales and customer success and product and marketing, that there are very positive experiences to be had out there where you can kind of make that justification. I've never seen ultra low to ultra high. I have seen ultra high drop from those changes, and I've seen mid go to somewhat higher. But I do think it's a gut thing. Like, I think you know in your gut when you start to see those flags, whether or not it's worth continuing to invest that time. You have to do what you have to do sometimes. But to your point, I think, and I think this is a great point for you, is kind of knowing like, I can't change this diamond by pounding, you know, limestone on it. It's just too hard. It won't change for me. So you can go and find yourself another organization who does operate from a strong place of culture, a strong place of open, candid, transparent collaboration, where sales and marketing aren't silos purposely divided to compete with each other. Marketing isn't just a grunt in the corner doing decks and social. It's a strategic partnership. And each leg of that stool, product and engineering, customer success, your executive team, marketing and sales, they all have to be bidirectionally working with each other in a very healthy way for truly scalable, explosive growth to happen. And that's everyone's dream, right? The hockey stick, the double, double, triple, triple, whatever. I do feel like you kind of know when you walk into those rooms how far you can take that. And again, as you, and I don't want to date myself, but as you get older, I think that it gets much easier to kind of read that earlier on, and then you can kind of structure your plans accordingly. But have faith that, like, if you're looking for something and you know, I know what works, I've done it before, I can do it again, just keep going. Like, everyone has had those hit and runs. Everyone in tech has gone through those peaks and valleys. If they haven't, I think that they've deleted something off their LinkedIn. But I do feel like that pain is part of the growth. So it's like drinking our own Kool-Aid to recognize that, for sure.
And I think you would agree. Like, as you build any ABM program, it's organizational change. There's going to be some form of a conflict or a tension or some form of, for lack of a word, like a fight. The goal is that you're fighting together against a problem, not fighting each other.
Yes, and that is extremely critical to call out.
Like, if you end up fighting each other, it's probably a low trust environment versus if we're all on the same team fighting a problem, that is, how do we solve this challenge? You're probably in a high trust environment. So again, if you're listening into this, and you're trying to figure it out, and you've been building an ABM program, and you feel like you're fighting your entire team to make it happen, the question is just simply, is this a fight worth fighting for at this organization? And I have been in a couple of fights, and they were not worth fighting for. And I hate to put it that bluntly, but like, I left. And I was more successful because I worked in an organization that was already aligned on how we all think versus fighting. You need to think a different way.
And I think that brings us right back to like what our first five sentences, what a great bookend, which was, we're talking about, it's not just a targeted account list that marketing goes, wee, and does brand awareness ads for, right? And magically six-figure deals like pop up and get to closed one. I mean, if that were easy, everyone would be, you know, IPOing or getting listed. I think that executive sponsorship from the top down is so distinctly critical for ABM to work. Now, there are definitely times when you can dig up, kind of like the gopher coming from the bottom to the top. Boy, is that hard, and it takes a lot of energy, and sometimes you end up losing team members or sales reps who disagree with the comp change structures. You know, we also call that out midway. But I think that it is not just targeted account lists. It's not just some magic that marketing whips and suddenly everything makes sense. It's executive alignment. It's sponsorship from those executives, not just in one meeting at the start of a QBR. It's like daily, monthly, weekly, quarterly. It's the whole gamut. Like, so it's holding hands on the roller coaster together so that when you peak and you come down and you come back up again and you're going through changes and fields are getting added to the CRM and all of a sudden someone's switching over account lists and this person's reacting and, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to close two of those because it was enterprise and now I'm this and that and the other thing. Like, those are fundamental change management issues. And those are by proxy, because you're dealing with humans, usually very emotionally charged issues. And so you have to be extremely tactical and intelligent with how you both delegate those changes and then manage them. And I think that's where that servant leadership mindset and high trust makes it so much easier, because you can distinctly see success at the end of the tunnel. When you're in low trust, it's blackout and every week is like a nuclear bomb going off and it's awful and it's criticism and micromanagement. It's extremely unhealthy, and I've never seen ABM work in that environment. I think when you can help to solicit and engage and collaborate into a high trust environment, and again, reach across as a marketer to make that happen, kind of being that UN translator, sales, product, engineering, customer success, and back again to executives, the payoffs are extraordinary, is in the compounded dividend area. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Well, Brandy, if people want to find you, where can they find you?
Oh, for sure. Well, LinkedIn, I think, is the place to be. So it's Brandy, B-R-A-N-D-E-E, and then last name Sanders, S-A-N-D-E-R-S. More than happy to commiserate, provide ABM therapy, share the peaks and very candid valleys that I think all of us who are probably listening to Scrappy ABM have been through, where you feel like you're kind of like struggling up that mountain. But I would just say at the end of the day, know that there are certainly great success stories to be had for teams that really reach across that line and put that work in operationally, because it always shows results at the end.
I love it. Well, again, Brandy, thank you so much for joining me today and kind of talking through very practically. There may be things that are outside of your control.
Yes.
And if you can't control the kind of culture that you're in, ABM is likely not going to be successful, but that hopefully should be encouraging to those that are in a high trust environment, that ABM can be successful with the alignment on the front end. So again, Brandy, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you in the next one.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.